Our buddy C-Red Fred is on the line.
Oh, I bet his nipples are basketball.
Did you know, Waddle, that he was banned from Twitter for the month of October?
Why?
He lost a bet, so he could not go on Twitter for a full month.
Just a month?
Hey, but I'm back. Oh, how you doing, guys?
Yeah. What's up, Freddy?
1 week until the final piece for the Red Leviathan. I can barely contain
final
myself.
Final piece. Stop it.
I got to tell you. Sylvie, we got to stop this talk about trading one of the core four, whether it's Wendell or any of the guys, any of the core four, Kobe, Laurie, or Zach, for LaMelo Ball. LaMelo Ball, no doubt, great vision, great ball handling. It's elite. He's a horrific shooter, shot 25% on 80 attempts in Australia, and a horrible defender. When has that combination ever been a winning combination for a great player? Horrible defender. I mean, his defense is as bad as it gets. Horrible shooter. You stay at four, and that final piece should be the 6'6", 225-pound small forward from Auburn, the best perimeter defender in the draft, Iron Man, Isaac Okoro, incredible finisher, incredible athlete. He's a Giannis buster. What say you?
A Giannis buster?
Yes. This guy's defense is elite. Tommy, I'm telling
you. The final piece to a team that had a 34% win percentage last year.
22 wins,
well, that's,
I think,
because we didn't have a perimeter defender. Who was our best perimeter defender? Done. We had nobody at the three to guard us, to help us guard. I'm telling you, this guy is great. Let's go. And here's what you do.
That sounds manufactured. That doesn't sound sincere to me. That sounds like something made up. That sounds like a radio bit to me.
Let's trade down. Let's trade down to the Knicks at 8, who want Obi Toppin, who's going to go at number 5 to Cleveland. They want Obi Toppin bad. You trade down, you get a protected first for next year, and then you can get a Coral or Halliburton at 8.
It's deeper there. Look, the guy who's drafted at 8 could be just as good as 4, could be just as good as 1. We know this, especially in this draft. But again, like this notion that the Bulls have their set core four is ridiculous. I don't know if anybody thinks that.
No.
This is far from a finished product.
I have no freaking clue. Like you said, there was no tournament. That's where I get most of my thoughts. I got no overseas thoughts. I haven't seen an overseas player play. I will tell you this. My trust is fully invested in the new regime.
Right.
So whatever you do, you're not going to hear a complaint from me, because it would be an ignorant complaint because I don't know.
The Chicago Bullseye is back after a long hiatus. This episode includes an interview with Bulldog Kevin Anderson. We'll do a deep dive into his top 5 NBA draft prospects. We talk a bit about a potential Zach LaVine contract extension. More importantly, Zach's future with the team in the long run. Between this show and the draft, we're going to have more prospect breakdowns with some of my trusted Bullseye experts, including basketball historian Tim Gallagher and Bull Scripted Keith France. One note before we get to Kevin, please click on the link to our first official Bullseye sponsor in the podcast description, Identity IQ. You'll hear a commercial at the end of the show describing the service. You've heard my prophecy of the sevens, 7 pick in 17, 7 pick in 18, 7 pick in 19, 7 letters in Michael, Scotty, and Arturis. Well, you need a credit score in the 700, so take advantage of our sponsor, get your score, and test their service with a promotion only available to our listeners, 7 days for $1. Cancel at any time, including in those 7 days. Go to www.identityiq.com/Chicago Bullseye. That's www.identityiq.com/Chicago Bullseye. Be sure to also check out the Big Red Bus, available on all podcast platforms. I do that show with the Podfather, Doug Tonis. And now to my interview with the great Bulldog Kevin Anderson of NBC Sports Chicago. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. And boy, oh boy, do we have a treat for you. As it gets cold outside, but the NBA talk is heating up, especially with our beloved Bull. And we have the great Bulldog Kevin Anderson from NBC Sports Chicago on the line. How you doing, Kevin? Good to talk to you, my old friend.
I'm good. Like, we actually have like a definitive pencil. I mean, don't like put that in Sharpie, but we've got a penciled in start to the NBA season on December 22nd. And so, like, we're going to get Bulls basketball in the preseason probably somewhere around December 10th, which is going to be fantastic. So I cannot wait. It's been such a long hiatus without basketball in terms of the Bulls basketball. So I can't wait. I actually did the math. If they play on December 22nd, they will have gone 287 days between regular season games.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I think this is going to be such an interesting time because we're really condensing three huge things in the draft, free agency, and preseason right into the regular season. It's going to be really a truly unique experience for NBA fans. So the wait is definitely hopefully going to be worth it, I think. It's going to be excitement galore for the next 45 to 50 days.
Yeah, we're going to have the draft, and free agency is slotted to begin like 2 to 3 days after the draft. And free agency essentially will be over Thanksgiving week, that weekend before, and then that week. And then, you know, literally a week later, training camps are supposed to open. And the NBA has a lot of details that they need to work out over the next 10 days to get everything fully set. I mean, they haven't officially said what the salary cap's going to be for next season. Which is, you know, certainly that has to be set by draft night, and with free agency 2 days later. I mean, there's a lot of things in the work. I mean, there's a lot of things in regards to free agency and Otto Porter's player option that he's certainly going to pick up, and all these things. So yeah, it's going to be a lightning. It's going to be 4 months of an off season crammed into about 2 weeks.
So let's start out with the draft, which obviously this will be the first really huge decision for Arturas and the new executive team. I can't wait to get your top five. I've been going to all the people that I respect, and there are few that I respect more in terms of talent evaluation. So I'm really eager to hear who you have ranked from 5 to 1. So let's start at number 5 with your fifth best prospect for this 2020 NBA draft.
Sure. And so I want to qualify this to say these are my top 5 highest ceiling, most potential prospects, because there is this kind of discussion when you're talking about NBA prospects. Some guys are more, quote, NBA ready right now and are going to step in and start possibly on playoff teams, certainly with Golden State, certainly a possibility. And not every prospect is created equal. Some guys have a much higher risk versus reward factor, which we'll get into. So for me, I would put Killian Hayes as my number 5 ceiling, most potential prospect in this year's draft. There's a lot I really like about Hayes' game. He is somebody, quite frankly, I would be very happy if the Bulls picked at number 4, depending on who went ahead of them. Hayes has a lot to like about his game. He's not perfect. He's got some flaws. He's really left-hand dominant, and you know, he just has this kind of game that I think kind of fits into what the Bulls want to do. And I think he is going to be one of the guys, whether he is picked 4th, 6th, 7th, wherever he goes, I think he's got that potential to be a starting caliber player in this league for a long time.
Yeah, I love him, and there's no doubt if the Bulls ended up with him, I would be more than satisfied. I think a 90% free throw percentage indicates a very high shooting ceiling. It's always been a predictive indicator for three-point range. So
yeah,
I feel pretty good about him. He's still young, and definitely his ceiling is, I think, pretty high. Who's number 4?
4 for me is Denny Avdija, the kid out of Israel. I'm actually pretty high on Denny. And the main reason being is when I look at talent, and so certainly everybody can watch a college basketball game or watch a combine, and that's only half of what makes up what a guy's potential is, right? And certainly he's got to have the talent, the ability, the physical attributes that you want in a player, you know, certainly speed, height, vertical, all of those things, length, wingspan. Those are all really important attributes to have for a basketball player. But to me, if I were to say, outside of just pure talent, the second most important thing to me in any player that I want on my team is work ethic. And work ethic is not something you're going to get looking at film. It's going to be something that you get talking to not just the player, but the player's teammates, the player's coaches, the players' coaches 2 years prior. And the one thing I really like about Denny Avdija is his apparent Jimmy Butler-like work ethic. We had Spencer Perlman from the Stepien on our Bulls Talk podcast last week, and Spencer said that he had talked to some of the assistant coaches that had worked with him in Israel. And they said about Avdija, this is according to Perlman, that Avdija's work ethic is greater than any player they've ever seen come through there. Now, certainly it's not somebody who is like a John Calipari or somebody who's even a Donovan that, you know, has coached NBA quality players. But sure. If he is saying that his work ethic is second to none that anybody ever worked with, the Israeli league is a pretty, you know, well-known and good quality league. And so if they're saying this about this 19-year-old kid, I'm going to take it to be true. And that is the most important thing outside of just pure talent for me is work ethic, because you can be 19 and have all the talent in the world and you don't have that work ethic, it's not going to develop. You're going to turn into Eddie Curry, and you're going to have just a flame-out career. But if you've got less talent but more work ethic, like a Jimmy Butler, you're going to absolutely have a long career in this league if you keep working at it and stay injury-free. So there's a lot I like about Avdija's game. My biggest concern is his shooting ability. Certainly, like you just mentioned about Killian Hayes with his free-throw percentage, Avdija is on the opposite end of that. He shot 55% in the Israeli league last season on, I think, 22 or 20 free throw attempts. So not a huge sample size, but he hadn't really done that well prior to that league either. So that's a concern. But you can coach up shooting. There's a lot of things you can't coach up as well, and that's his size and ability. And so Avdija, you know, I think people are unfairly trying to make the Luka comparison, you know, because he's Eastern European, played in Israel, that people want to kind of immediately go, well, he's next to Luka Doncic. And that's not fair to him at all, because Luka is yeah. is a top five player, right? Exactly. Like, Luka is a generational player yeah. in this league. And so to even, like, remotely compare, it's like saying somebody's the next Jordan, right? Like, Harold Miner doesn't need that comparison. It's not fair to Harold Miner. And so, like, when you say Denny Avdija is going to be the next Luka, or even make that even comparison, that's really not fair to him. But I do think Avdija has a massive ton of potential, and I think he's got all-star potential in my mind.
Yeah, so, I mean, everyone I respect you a ton. You know, Rob Schaefer, there's a lot of people, some of the draft, Jonathan Givony, all love this guy. And I've missed it. I just, my biggest concerns are, like, I listened to that pod you're talking about. Excellent pod. I suggest everybody go back and listen to that Bulls talk. But, like, his excuses for, like, why he's 55% from the free throw line was, quote unquote, role fluctuation, and he gets too down on himself too much. And, right. you know, I felt worse after hearing that than, like, his answers to that question should have been, I'm going to do whatever it takes to become a 90 to 100 you know, percent free throw shooter, like, not role fluctuation. You're not standing at the free throw line and thinking about your role. And that's not why you're breaking at a 55% rate. It's just, it's like, I do see the talent. I mean, the guy's clearly talented. He has the size to play in the league. There's no doubt about it. He's got a very nice passing ability. He can handle the ball pretty well for a man that size. But like the Luka comparisons are just laughable. I was not the biggest Luka fan, but it was clear he had vision. I stated he'd have a long NBA career mm-hmm. because of it. He was also an 80% free throw shooter. Like 55% is like really concerning to me. And I agree with you. Work ethic is really hard for us just sitting on the outside to measure. And if he has that, I feel a lot better about his ability of maxing out his skill. My issue with him is on tape, from what I've seen, I think he's a tweener on the defensive end. I don't see a lot of, you know, lateral quickness. And I don't see, I think he's too slow laterally to guard the best threes in the NBA, but he's too weak right now to guard the best fours. That's something you can get stronger at, add weight, get better and be a four, but he's clearly a four to me eventually.
Yeah, he's a point four. I absolutely agree with you. I mean, he is more to me, a Tony Kukoc than anyone else, right? I mean, Avdija is 6'9". He's got fantastic vision. He's got great court awareness, good basketball IQ. And, yeah, the shooting's not there. The defense isn't there. But you don't have to be a great on-ball defender if you're playing the four. You do if you're playing the three. So that's absolutely a fair assessment of him. And that's really his lack of consistent shooting and his defense, on-ball defense, are probably what's going to hurt him a little bit. But at 19, like, there are a lot of prospects in this draft who have huge red flags about their shooting.
No doubt.
Avdija is one of those.
Curls.
LaMelo Ball, which we'll talk about in a little bit, is one of them. Haliburton is another. Like, there's a lot of guys who just aren't coming into the league with a ready-made NBA shot. That is not an issue to me at 19, because you can have a good coaching staff completely reform somebody's shot and get them in to do hundreds and thousands of reps, and they'll be fine. If it's somebody who is coming into the league at age 22, that's going to be a little bit more difficult to do, since they've have had 3 to 4 years of a pretty competitive basketball with that shot. It's going to be a little bit more difficult to break it down. And really it comes down to, again, how willing is the player to work with the coaching staff and go, hey, you're right, my shot is having issues. My elbow's kind of shooting out a little bit, or my release is too slow because of my, you know, position. There's, you know, it's like a golf swing, right? There's, sure, there's about a good 24 things that go into a good basketball jump shot that can be tweaked and changed to make it better. So if Avdija's work ethic is there, which it seems to be, I'm not as down as him about his shot as maybe somebody else. But at the same time, there are some things to like about him and love about his game too.
No doubt. But again, one more point. If fit is an, you know, fit's going to be an issue then, right? If he comes here and his best position is a four, we both agree on that. What's the future for Larry Markkanen? What's the future for Wendell Carter Jr., who wants to play some time at the four? You know, whereas we have a lot bigger hole at the three. And I know that I've heard this argument before. It's stupid to draft for fit. And I agree on that 100%. But I don't agree with it when all these players are relatively equal. I don't think there's a huge delta between 1 and 7 in this draft. There's nobody's like a Zion or really clearly.
No, there's not. There's no Ja. There's no Zion in this draft. But to me, if you're picking in the late lottery, then I think you have to take fit into consideration. Certainly when you're taking outside the lottery and in the second round, you must look at fit with your team, with who you're drafting. But when you're picking at 4 and you're picking potentially a 19-year-old, I'm not that concerned about, well, how is he going to fit with Markkanen when we don't know if Markkanen is going to be on this Bulls team a year from now. And so, like, it doesn't bother me that much. If Markkanen had been the 7th overall pick last year, I would have a little bit more concern about it, right? I'd say, you know what, this is, you know, Markkanen's probably, we know Markkanen is not going to play the 3 in this league. There's an argument to be made that he's maybe possibly more suited at the 5, depending on who's at the 4, maybe, in certain lineups. Certainly Boylan wanted to use him at the 5 at certain times last year, and it didn't really work out as much for multiple reasons. But I'm not concerned about, oh, okay, we've got Wendell, and we've got Gafford, and we've got Markkanen up front. There's no place for Avdija. Like, you make it work. If they truly believe he is the best player on the board when they're picking at 4, then you take them and you just go, hey, we're gonna just see where it works, right? And if it turns out that Markkanen is an all-star and Wendell is an all-star and Avdija's got all-star potential, then maybe you end up flipping one of those for another fantastic piece. I mean, you could do a lot worse than having all-star quality depth on your bigs. So, like, I'm okay with it.
Fair point. Number 3.
James Wiseman, to me. There are a lot of things to like about Wiseman's game. He is certainly super athletic, great size, can score, can rebound with the best of them. He's not a guy that has a lot of film on him, which is a little bit of a concern to me, considering how few games he played in Memphis, and seemingly at times wasn't this clearly the best player on the floor every time he was out there, even going back to high school.
Correct.
At times. But there is a massive ton of potential with Wiseman if he develops his game. And like, it's at 7-1 with his ability, there is no ceiling, right? Like, if a team can find a way to use him and use him really well, then he's going to be a potential all-star in the right team. Like, he's just got that ability. But there's just so many question marks with him, if he can do it consistently, if he can put together not just a season of 72 games, which we're going to get this year, but, you know, quite honestly, can he play 20 games in a season? Like, we don't know. And so that injury concern is a legit concern. And so that there's a few – if I was drafting at 3 and Wiseman was there, I'm not sure I'd take him. Like, if, for instance, I wouldn't – if he's there at 4 and it's between – let's say the top 3 picks are Ball, Edwards, and Avdija goes 3. And you're looking at number 4 – choosing between Wiseman and Hayes for the Bulls, I'm taking Hayes in that situation. I've got him ahead of Avdija and Hayes in terms of my big board, in terms of potential. However, specific to the Bulls, I would not take Wiseman if it were between Hayes and Wiseman.
I agree 100%. I think it's more so just the valued position of the center position. It's, can you envision him being on the court to close games in a finals? And I don't see how you can argue that guy, that type of player, unless you're Embiid, but again, Embiid never got to the finals. That's the whole point, is the guys that teams are getting into the finals have tremendous versatility defensively. More importantly, their best positions are playing the 3, the 4, the 2. It's not the center position. It's just,
yeah, but you know, you could certainly look at what the Suns have done with Ayton, and like, there is a place for uber talented bigs in this league. It's not like it was 10 years ago, certainly even 5 years ago, with some teams in terms of a traditional big. But with his athletic ability, and again, very young and has the potential to develop, if he's got the work ethic and can develop a mid-range game, he's going to be a fantastic player.
Yeah, that's the thing. What's his work ethic like? You know, it's something that we just can't see from where we're at.
No,
so whoever drafts him better have a good handle on that. Number 2.
That's the biggest thing. That's the biggest thing about like combine interviews and research. It's about finding out how hard is a guy going to work and how badly does he want it. Like, that's what matters, man. Like, if you get a guy in who doesn't want to be coached, wants to be instantly become the star on a team, it is not going to work out until that person truly humbles themselves and maybe even goes through a couple setbacks before they put the work ethic in.
Yeah.
Number 2 to me, in terms of overall potential, is Anthony Edwards, shooting guard out of Georgia. He can flat out score, man. He can do it. He's got an NBA ready jump shot. Like, Edwards can score in multiple ways, but he doesn't just rely on the 3. He doesn't rely on the perimeter shot. He can get after it. He is somebody that I think was probably underutilized at Georgia at times. And I don't like to make this comparison because I think people sometimes get the wrong idea, but he's got like Andrew Wiggins's ability. And that's not a knock, right? Like, Wiggins, certainly his career hasn't gone the way he's wanted to, and he's certainly hoping that there's a resurgence with him. But at the same time, Edwards has that scoring ability that Wiggins does have. Like, Wiggins has instant scoring ability. Edwards has it too. And so Edwards has a lot of potential. I'm not ready to say that he's going to be a perennial all-star because there's no one in this draft that I think has the talent that Ja or Zion had. It just isn't there. So, you know, a lot of these guys can develop. There's this kind of weak draft mentality that a lot of people have when talking about this draft, and I think that's fair to a certain extent that there is no franchise superstar that's going to come in day one and turn your franchise around. Like, that guy isn't in this draft. However, there is a lot of depth and value in this draft.
Agreed.
Like, there are guys that are going to be picked 10 to 15 that are going to be really good players. Like Devin Vassell, the kid from Florida State, I think has got an a lot of potential and is going to be picked somewhere in that like 8 to 14 range. And quite, it could be a all-star 3 years from now. There's a lot of guys who are going to be picked in the teens who are going to become solid starters on playoff teams. So there is depth in this draft. There isn't, to me, a superstar in this draft. There's no Wade. There's no LeBron. Like, that's just not what this draft is. But there are good players in the draft. And to say it's a weak draft and that team should completely, like, punt out of this draft, I think would be a mistake. You can still get some really good players to do more than just fill your roster, but become quality pieces to what you hope would be a championship caliber team. So Edwards, to me, has that potential to be a not necessarily 1A, maybe not even 1B, but certainly 1C on a team and have that that scoring ability that a lot of teams need.
Yeah, your analysis and or overview of this draft, I agree with 100%. And it's really hard to tell. You know, like Damian Lillard went sixth, you know, several years ago. Nobody really expected him to be a superstar. And I think that we'll see something similar like that out of this draft where, you know, like a kid like Kira Lewis, who's in some projections going as far back as the late first round, could easily be an all-star. Not easily, but it's possible, right? He works hard, becomes better. I love Aaron Nesmith. And most mocks, I've seen him go at 13, 14, you know, anywhere from 10 to 16. I think he could end up being the best player in this draft. He's an incredible shooter and just underrated athlete. So it's really hard to say about this draft, but I agree with you 100%. There's going to be a lot of value in this draft.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, you brought up the Lillard comparison, which I think is wonderful because Lillard is a superstar in today's game. He absolutely is. But how did he go from not being a top five pick to being a superstar? Work ethic. Like, he worked at it. Like, Lillard's one of the hardest workers in the game. And so, like, he kept expanding his range. Like, Lillard, his game is made for today's NBA. And, my God, I mean, he's one of the most efficient and pure scorers in the league. I mean, he's on, you count on one hand how many guys can put up 50 in a game. He's in that list. And so, yeah, you're right. I mean, there are certainly drafts that the best player is not picked in the lottery, not picked in the 10. And, you know, that happens. I mean, we've got guys who just, because they're overlooked, because they've got one major flaw that they drop, or there's a injury red flag that they drop that they end up not having an issue with, it's going to happen. There are going to be guys picked in these teens who are probably going to be all-stars and be very good players. And, you know, Kira Lewis is one of those guys. But getting back to our top five talent, I had a really hard time justifying putting LaMelo Ball number one. But ultimately, for me, when you look at a player's true ceiling, he has the most potential of any player in this draft. And the reason I say that is because he is got absolutely, he's elite, and I mean upper echelon, will be top three in the league at these two skills, elite at his ball handling ability and at his court vision and passing. He is going to step in, and outside of Steph and Kyrie, LaMelo Ball's handles are right there behind the two of those guys. And that is something that is really hard to overlook and understate in terms of how important that is for a point guard. He can get from anywhere on the floor to where he wants to with the ball. He can split double teams very easily. He's got fantastic footwork. And he has the ability to do a James Harden-like hesitation to put defenders off balance. Like, he's got the handles that are absolutely elite level. And the same thing with his passing ability. I think in terms of his skill set, I would put his handles number one and his passing ability and vision number two. He just has a huge just LeBron-esque court vision, right? It's like Magic and LeBron in terms of how he sees the floor. And at his size, being 6'7", this isn't like a Kyrie who's, you know, he's certainly a few inches shorter, or Steph several inches shorter than this. To have that passing ability at 6'7", it makes him have truly, to me, the potential ahead of anybody on this list, right? Anybody we just brought up, anyone else potentially could go in this draft. Those two skills set him above everybody else. But he's not a perfect prospect. And there are several red flags to me on why we're hearing LaMelo Ball potentially drop out of the top three. I think I saw a report a few days ago that there's speculation that he may drop out of the top seven,
which
I think is absolutely insane. Like, there's no way that happens. There's no way that happens unless he flat out tells teams, "You can pick me. I will not sign with you. I will not play. I will go back to Australia for 2 years if that's what it takes." Right? Like, if he is that hell bent playing for the Knicks, that is the only scenario I see in which he falls that far. And, you know, certainly in the history of professional sports, to do a little throwback for you, John Elway did that. you know, and so guys sometimes could do that. And I could see the Knicks being very happy with that happening. But I don't see him dropping to eight where the Knicks are picking outside of that specific instance, which he publicly comes out and says, "I'm not playing for you. If I pick you, I'll just go back to Australia for 2 years," if he's that stubborn. Again, that's just pure speculation on my part. I have not heard any of that at all, but that's the only scenario I can see him dropping that far. Our Casey Johnson, actually, on our Bulls Talk podcast, which is coming out Tuesday of this week, so when you're listening to this, it'll already be out. Casey says that he believes if LaMelo is there at four, the Bulls absolutely will be taking him. Mm-hmm. And so he's not dropping out of the top four. And I believe KC when he says that, and I think he's right when he says that. Now, getting back to, like, the red flags about Ball and why I don't think Ball is a superstar and ready to be a franchise player. Number one is his shot. His jump shot is as – how do I put this mildly? It's a huge concern, and it needs to be completely retooled and reworked if he's going to have any semblance of a jump shot at the NBA level. His release is extremely low. He gets little to no elevation when he takes a jump shot. It is kind of like a push-forward type shot in which any competent defender is going to get a hand or a finger on it every single time. Like he can work on the James Harden step back all he wants with the shot release that he has and the timing. He is just not going to be a good shooter at the NBA level. And that's a big red flag, right? Work at it, then it's okay.
Yeah, I've never looked at a prospect where I've been more confused or had a greater disparity in what he could be. I mean, you're absolutely right. Ball handling and passing is exceptional. And that's what you want to have with a guy in the top five. What do you do that's exceptional? Like, as I said before, that's my issue with Denny. I don't think he does anything, you know, close to exceptional. This guy does. I mean, it's just amazing how good of a passer he is and how good of a ball handler. But all that is all, unless you develop at least a respectable jump shot, doesn't matter how good of a passer you are or a ball handler. In the NBA, they're just going to let you shoot out, hang out there as much as you want and, you know, lay off of you and play the passing lanes. And it's really going to be difficult. So, I mean, to me, he could be anything from an all-star, multi-year all-star, to a bust. And it's really
scary.
Yeah, and
that's the thing. Huge risk, huge reward, though. You are absolutely right. He's got the highest ceiling of anybody in the draft, but he also has the lowest floor in relation to that ceiling of anybody in the draft also. And, like, the other thing that concerns me about LaMelo is he has been catered to his entire basketball life. Every team that he's been on, from his high school, following his brothers, to the AU teams, to going to playing in Europe and then Australia, he has been catered to the entire time. What happens if he gets on a team, a professional basketball team, that does not cater to him in any way, shape, or form? That he is coming in not given a starting spot, but he has to earn a starting spot. That is a concern for me on how he's going to react to that situation. Now, maybe he comes in with a chip on his shoulder and he's willing to absolutely put the work in. And let's say the Bulls do take him and then he's got to essentially earn a starting spot. Is he going to be able to do that in a short training camp or certainly under a veteran coach like Billy Donovan? I don't know. I don't know how he's going to react to that. You know, like, he might do better in a situation like New York, in which they're going to go, you're starting from day one. We want to make you the centerpiece of this team, and you're going to be a star immediately. Like, if he gets drafted by the Warriors, he's not a star in that team, right?
Yeah.
If he gets drafted by the Bulls, he's not a star on that team. And so, like, how is Ball going to react to those things? And that is where the interview process comes into play again, with teams doing research. And so, like, I don't know. I'm torn if he is there for, it's going to be hard for the Bulls, for me to say the Bulls should pass on him. However, if he is taken by the Bulls, I have to have faith and trust that Eversley and Karnišovas have done their research, which you know they have, and they feel like they can make it work with this kid. If they take him at four in order to trade down to the Knicks, then it's the right move. Like, clearly they're seeing something. Like, if that happens, and I would not absolutely put it past them at all to take Ball four and then flip him to the Knicks and get the eighth pick and then something else, like, that would be, they clearly would see something in Ball that says, you know what, he's not going to work out here in this situation. We can get the eighth pick, take the player we were going to take it for at eight, like maybe a Haliburton or maybe a Hayes, and get another asset, maybe another first-round pick, a future first-round pick in the mix. Then that's the right move. And so Ball has that potential. And I'm going to segue into your next question ahead of you, so I'm kind of doing your job for you here, which I apologize for. But there is absolutely no way I would trade up in this draft to get LaMelo Ball. None. Like, if it involves trading Thad or Satoransky in four, yeah, absolutely, I'll do it. But we all know that's not going to happen. That if they're going to trade up from 4-1 to get Ball, or 4-2 even, to get Ball, it's going to take trading the fourth pick, certainly, which they have, but also one of their, what we would say, with their core pieces. Right? Like,
yeah.
Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr.
Yeah,
Zach,
no way.
Kobe.
No way. Yeah.
Those four. Those are your four pieces. And, there is no way I'm trading any of those four guys to trade up from 4-2 or 1 just to take LaMelo Ball. I'm not doing it.
I agree 100%. The only one I would potentially say is Zach. And that's because of the contract situation and the fact that Kobe and Zach are similar players. I think they're going to, you know, they're basically combo guards with a score first mentality. And if you really believe in Kobe White, and I do after watching those last 10 games,
so do I.
You know, I think that, I don't know how good of a fit Zach and Kobe White are in the backcourt long term. I guess you can get away with it a few years while you're still developing, but that's a question you got to ask yourself. And the Bulls determine that it's not going to fit. Yeah, I would consider trading Zach to move up, but you better get some nice assets in return, move up higher to get the guy that you want. It's going to be fascinating.
Here's the thing, Fred. If you do that, and I'm not saying that this is a completely fair comparison. However, if you do that, it turns into the Mitch Trubisky trade, because you are putting all your chips immediately in on this one guy you just traded up for. And if it doesn't work out, then your entire career with this organization is going to be defined by that trade.
Yeah.
And that Ryan Pace's career with the Bears, however many seasons are left, his career is
hopefully
defined by that trade.
Yeah.
It is.
Absolutely. And it's going to be almost next to impossible unless he wins a Super Bowl for him to get over it. Because
That's not to say you shouldn't take risk, and it's not to say, oh, you know what, we don't want to. If it doesn't work out, we're going to be out of a job. Like, you can't, as a front office executive, you can't make decisions because of how it could look poorly on. You go with what you should. But when I'm talking about moving up to four, hypothetically, let's say that it was Kobe White had just finished his sophomore year at North Carolina, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's say that Wendell Carter just finished his junior year at Duke, that Lauri Markkanen just finished his senior year at Arizona, and that for whatever reason, let's de-age Zach by a couple years, and let's say he just finishes junior year at UCLA, right?
Yeah.
So, like, where we know these four players are, any of those four players where we know they are, they would all be taken first overall in this draft.
I agree.
So, yeah. Why would you take a player that, if hypothetically they were on the draft board then, why would you trade that player and the fourth pick that you have just to move up to take somebody who's got a little bit more potential, maybe? I just don't see it. Unless, here's the only situation in which it would make sense. And I'll talk about Levine's contract situation a little bit too. The only way it makes sense, if in the extremely limited time, and then we're talking about 10 days was their mini camp that they had last month, right? Like we're talking very limited time.
Yep.
Or your evaluation of film, or your interviews with your old coaching staff and your new coaching staff and your scouts and your trainers and all those people. If you believe that Lauri Markkanen's future, he's already peaked, that whether it's his shoulder or his potential, if you think he is never going to be anything more than the player he is right now, then I understand it. Right, then you are essentially, in your mind, selling high on a guy that you don't think is ever going to amount to the potential that he has. That's the only way you do it. But if you still have a shred of hope that Markkanen is going to be a viable quality starter or all-star potential, you can't make that trade. You can't. And we certainly know from what we saw from Kobe, what we saw from Wendell in year one, that potential is there, the work ethic is there. And you get back to Zach and the whole contract situation. He has one of the best contracts in the NBA.
No doubt.
In terms of value, and especially now, like his contract, because of what has happened with the revenue situation in the league and the salary cap going down from the projection and only going up, they're estimating that they want to kind of even out the growth because of the potential for massive revenue loss next season as well, that they want to have just a 2% increase in the salary cap the following year. That makes Zach's contract even more valuable. He is under team control for the next two seasons. And so I am not trading a guy who can drop 27 a game and a great deal and a great contract just to move up two spots in this draft. Like, I'm not doing it. Like, I'm not giving Golden State Zach LaVine and another piece to play around with those guys. Like, Zach is an all-star on a playoff-caliber team. We saw it last year. We both know that if the Bulls have been even semi-competent last season heading into that final week in January, that Zach LaVine would have been an all-star. He would have been. Now, you could say he would have got a little hometown cooking. Yeah, you know what? He would have. But he has the all-star caliber. He's got that potential. He's got that ability. And so I'm not selling low on a guy who's got that ability, that scoring ability, that is very difficult to find in the league. I mean, there aren't 30 guys in this league who can score 26, 27 a game. We kind of get caught up sometimes in NBA superstars and what a top five player looks like and a top 10 player looks like. There are 30 teams in this league. There aren't 30 guys who can score 27. And so I'm not taking Zach under control for 2 years under a great deal and flipping him just so I can get LaMelo Ball. No way. No way I'm doing it.
I agree. I think it's far too big of a risk. Let's get a little deeper dive into Zach's contract because he's making $19.5 for the next 2 years.
It's a kind of a rare contract, and it's a flat, no increase deal. Like usually you see guys make 19.5, then the following year they're making like 21, and the following year after that it's like 23. That makes it even more valuable than a normal contract with a 6% increase.
So Rob Schaefer, the great Rob Schaefer, suggested, the Bulls can extend him this offseason, quote unquote offseason, which will be about a 3-week period. 23.4 million in 22-23, $25.3 million in 23-24 and $27.1 million in 24-25. That's 5 years, $115 million all told. I think it's a bargain for a guy who's averaging 24-plus at his age, still young, I think he's 25. You know, so I absolutely would offer that. Would you concur?
And so, I'm going to hesitantly say yes if everything was normal. However, things are not normal in this situation with the pandemic, with the cap. Those are factors that you have to consider right now. And that's in the same conversation of Lauri Markkanen up for a rookie extension deal. And what they potentially could offer him, and if he's going to sign that deal like a Taj Gibson did a few years ago. But specific to Zach, I would say I want to see how he is in Billy Donovan's system. Like, we know that Zach, the high usage Zach, who is getting 20 shots a game, can put up 27 points, and that's actually pretty effective. Like, he doesn't need 35 shots to put up 27 points. We certainly know that Zach can improve on the defensive end, which I actually think he did last year, which was a little bit overlooked considering how the team was.
Agreed.
So I want to see him under Billy Donovan first. I want to see how he is in a system. Like, ultimately, the best Zach LaVine may not be a 27 or 28 per game scorer. The best Zach LaVine might be a 23 or 24 point per game scorer. That's not to say he's less valuable scoring less, but he can do some other things. He's actually a pretty good passer, and I would like to see a lower scoring Zach with a lower usage rate. Like, I honestly think that the Bulls need to use Zach more like the Warriors use Klay Thompson. Like, I think he is an incredible spot up shooter. Incredible, coming off a screen, pull up shooter. They need to use him more in that situation. And I know it's kind of goes against what he's done most of his career with the high usage rate and having the ball in his hand. But if you're going to coexist with Kobe or either a Denny Avdija or Killian Hayes or even LaMelo Ball, Zach is going to have to learn how to get his buckets without the ball in his hand. And if he can do that, if he can score 23 or 24 a game, even 22 a game, off like five fewer shots, then that's going to be a better version of Zach, and it's going to be a better Bulls team.
100% agree. He should be averaging 20 points per game, but getting assists up to 6 or 7, which I think he has the ability to do. That's the best the Bulls will be. You know, when he's taking too many shots, I thought he played hero ball a little bit too much, especially early in the season last year. But I saw it in games of win at Washington against the Wizards and overtime win. He was facilitating for others and really bringing out the best in others. That's what I want to see from Zach.
Yeah, and here's the thing about LaVine that I think people get a little too caught up in. And you actually bring up a really good point about the hero ball thing. Number one, that's because that's what Boylan asked him to do, right? Like, he wanted to build his team around Zach, and he wanted Zach to learn in those situations. We saw several late game, under 10 seconds, potential game time, potential game winning shot by Zach, in which Zach kind of fumbled the ball or missed a shot. But he was like, that's part of the maturation process of a young player on a not really good team. It's like, put him in those situations. Like, let him learn. That's the entire point of trying to build up your core players. But at the same time, who is Zach going to pass to in those situations? Like, we had one opening night game from Lauri Markkanen that we thought he was going to be an all-star, in which he drops 35 and 17. And then after that, he fell off a cliff. And we saw how he was the first 2 months of the season with his shooting. There was nobody on the floor during the first three months of the season last year that I wanted Zach to pass it to. Nobody.
Yeah.
It wasn't until he started to play significant minutes with Kobe that it then made sense. Well, Zach, you don't have to do it all yourself. And that is something I think LaVine knows and is totally fine with. Like, LaVine loves playing with Kobe White because he knows Kobe White being on the floor with him takes all the defensive pressure off of him to make a play. And that's a good thing. And that's not to say pressure in terms of like a mental pressure, in terms of actual defensive scheming pressure off a guy. And so I think Zach's aware that with the right talent around him, and truly for Zach to be a star in this league, he needs to be on the playoff team. Needs to.
No doubt. He's got to show he can win. Absolutely agree.
He's got to show he can win.
So I do want to take one more question on this one, which is I was talking to the great one, Doug Tonis, the other day, and he said, let's assume the Bulls offer that extension, and he turns it down. He's like, I'll finish out the next 2 years. You're in a similar situation that you had with Jimmy Butler. I mean, obviously, Jimmy was at a higher level as a player than Zach was, and they would have had to pay him more, you know, I think the Supermax at that point. But that's a tough call for me. Like, do I want to pay Zach LaVine, you know, 30, what Booker's making, you know, 30 million mm-hmm. plus? I'm not sure I do. You know, what say you on that?
So that then would be in a situation in which you would trade him would be with a next summer with a year left on his contract. And so at that point, we will have seen Zach play a season under Donovan with the rest of his teammates, whoever they pick fourth or, you know, moving up or moving down, whoever they take in the first round of this draft. Like, we're gonna truly know who Wendell Carter is after next season. We're going to really know who Lauri Markkanen is after next season. We'll have a much better idea who Kobe White is, too. And so, depending on how those factors shake out, I might be okay, especially heading into an offseason in which they're going to have a massive ton of cap room next year. And if they feel like, hey, you know what, we can flip Zach for the right piece to work with this free agent we're going to sign, or to work because we now believe Kobe and Markkanen and Wendell are our future, then I'm okay with it. But if you go in to next offseason, next summer, a year from now, if you go into that offseason with the feeling that Markkanen's not part of your future and that Wendell's ceiling is just a great defensive player on a starting playoff team, and that's all his ceiling is, which honestly is an okay ceiling. Like, that's not to belittle Wendell at all, but there are people who believe Wendell has a higher ceiling than that, including me right now. If you go into that type of offseason and your first round pick is just okay, it's not going to be a superstar, it's just a piece, which a piece is fine, then maybe you don't trade Zach. And so I think it really comes down to next season. Like, next season is so important across the board for this franchise.
Yeah.
For everybody. Everybody. Like, we're going to find out what every single piece on this team, who they are and how they fit. And let's not forget, like, Karnišovas and Eversley and Donovan have a very specific vision they have for how they want basketball to be played. Like, we saw certainly what Karnišovas did with the Nuggets franchise and getting certain players like Jokic, like Murray, guys that fit into a system and have a very particular skill set that they think of what they're looking for. And so if Zach doesn't have that skill set, then you flip him. If you don't think, like, there aren't but probably five players in this league who are going to be guaranteed superstars on all 30 teams, no matter who they were put on, right? Like, there just are guys who are really good players, who are great players, who are a product of their system to a lesser extent. Certainly they're great players and certainly they're stars. But there's probably only five players in this league who you can literally take and put on 29 other teams and they would be a perennial all-star. And so Zach's not one of those five. And so if you don't think Zach is part of the future when they hit next offseason, then it makes sense to trade him because you have a year left on his deal. He still has very high value, and there are going to be a lot of teams who are willing to give you some assets for Zach at that point. But we have to get through another season before I can definitively say, yes, they should, or no, they shouldn't.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating because you're right, man. If this team misses the playoffs again, Zach LaVine's going to be playing a whole lot of NBA basketball without ever making the playoffs. And at some point, it's going to be a reflection on him because he's been the best player on this team for, you know, this will be his fourth year with the Bulls. And
yeah, and here's the other wrinkle, Fred, like, about missing the playoffs or making the playoffs. We haven't gotten official word from the league on what the schedule is going to be. My guess is that we'll have the schedule probably before Thanksgiving, because they're not going to want to go into training camp with teams literally not knowing who they play December 22nd, right? But the expectation around the league is that they are going to do a modified schedule, very similar to what Major League Baseball did this past year, in that there will be teams with limited travel. It's my expectation that you will not see the Eastern Conference play the Western Conference every game like we used to. Like, every team's not going to get the Lakers. Like, every Eastern Conference team's not going to get the Lakers. They're not going to get the Mavericks. It's not going to happen. And I would be, I would actually be pretty surprised if it's not West versus West for 72 games and East versus East for 72 games. I just think that we're going to see the Bulls end up playing the Cavs, the Pacers, the Bucks, and the Pistons seven times during this next season.
Well, there's no excuse then. Obviously, the Bucks would be a hard opponent, but you gotta be winning then. You gotta be in the playoffs.
Yeah, so you hit it. Like, if you're only playing the East, you better be one of those top eight teams. Or the expectation is that they're going to do some type of modified format where the top 10 teams potentially could be in this playoff race, if you will, and that teams 7, 8, 9, and 10. One of the proposals that I've read is that the top six teams will be all locked in on the final day of the regular season in each conference, and that teams 7 through 10 will play a mini tournament of sorts to determine who gets the 7th and 8th spots. In the playoffs. So if you're the Bulls and you're playing only the Eastern Conference, you better damn be sure you're one of the top 10 teams. You've got to be playing in that, at the minimum, in that tournament, if that's indeed what the NBA follows through. You have to. You can't. And so if they don't, if they're like 11th and they're only playing Eastern Conference teams, and like Zach's averaging 29 a game, but they're still a losing team, your decision's made for you, because you're not a winning team then.
Agreed. One final question. I can't thank you enough for your time here, Kevin. One final question.
Anytime, Fred.
On Patrick Williams, who I've been hearing a lot now, and there was a recent report by Ginobili about that he would potentially be picked at number 4, which obviously is the spot for the Bulls.
Almost
fell out of my chair.
Insanity.
Yeah. So, I know. So what's your take on him as a player, and why would the Bulls even remotely be interested in him at that point?
I don't even think he's the best player on Florida State. Like, Devin Vassell is a better prospect and got more potential than Patrick Williams to me. Williams is funny. So, like, we didn't get into Obi Toppin too much. Like, Obi Toppin has got amazing ability on the offensive end. But, like, he makes Carlos Boozer, like, first-team all-defense.
Oh, how dare you.
That's just the reality, man. Toppin is a very poor defensive player.
The
reason I use that analogy is because Patrick Williams is a very good defensive player, right?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have the offensive skill sets that Obi Toppin has. He doesn't have that vertical leap that's going to have people jumping out of their seats when we do get to sit in seats again in an NBA arena. But he's a really good defender, and he's a four. He's not good enough to defend threes, though, and that's the problem I have with Williams. Is you're taking a guy who projects to be a four, like, he's not athletic enough to guard threes.
Agreed.
And in today's NBA, that is an issue, especially with the constant switching that happens at that level, and with the teams that like to go small, is that Williams is going to be playing against, for stretches, guys who are wings at the power forward position. And I don't think he's got the ability right now to defend those players. Like, he's a good pick-and-pop, mid-range power forward.
I've watched a lot of Patrick Williams. I've watched a lot of Isaac Okoro. I don't know how you can watch 5 hours of both players and come to the conclusion that Patrick Williams should be picked ahead of Isaac Okoro.
No, absolutely right. Yes, Okoro is an elite defensive player.
Exactly. And I think he's an elite finisher. I think he's an elite athlete. I think he has everything but the jump shot. But I continually go back to the same thing. He's right in the same range percentage-wise as Ball, Edwards, everybody, almost all the great Denny, a lot of these players at the top of the draft aren't any significantly better than he is as far as shooting.
Yeah, and when you're talking about the Bulls, like, it is about fit at that point, right? Like, if, let's say, there's no way you take Williams at four. There's no way you do it. But let's say they trade down. Let's say they trade back to where, let's say where the Wizards are taking, right? Or maybe the Suns at like 9 and 10. At that point, I do think you have to consider fit a little bit. Like the whole discussion we had earlier about where does Denny Avdija fit in. And I don't, again, think that fit matters when you're picking at four. You just find a way to make it work. But when you're picking at 10, I think fit does have to be taken into account. And Patrick Williams is a guy who's completely redundant from what you have in Wendell, yeah. What you have in Thad.
Larry.
Now, Thad obviously can be flipped pretty easily if you need to, but what you have in Markkanen, what you have a little bit, certainly in Gafford, even though Gafford's more of a true center. And so, those guys, to me, like, I just don't see, like, Williams doesn't blow me away enough to say, okay, he's going to be the answer at this position for the next 4 years. There are just too many other guys that I like Vassell, like Okoro, like Halliburton, that if I'm trading back in this draft, which I'll put on record saying I actually think, given the right trade opportunity, trading back in this draft may be the smart play. Like, if, again, a Knicks team wants to give you a future first, a top five protected first, or hell, an unprotected first round pick, and the eighth pick to move up to take LaMelo at four, I'm taking that deal, absolutely. Because that way at eight, I'm getting probably Halliburton, or hell, you may even get Hayes at that point, and you're getting a future first. Like, that's good value to me. But there are guys in that 8 to 12 range that I like a lot more than Williams. Like, that's not to say Williams isn't going to be a good player and can't be a good player. I just don't see things that jump out to me that saying he's going to be elite at this thing. Like, his jump shot isn't an NBA 3. It's a mid-range jump shot. Like, he's got good, solid jumper from 15 to 18. He's a good defender. Like, he's a good player. He's a good piece, but he's not somebody I'm going to, like, say you're going to be starting day one with this team.
I think the best-case scenario for the Bulls, Obi Toppin is beloved by the Knicks and Leon Rose, and there's a long history of Leon Rose being in love with Obi Toppin. And I don't think Toppin falls past Cleveland at five. If the Bulls go back to eight with a trade with the Knicks and acquire one of their assets for next year's draft, I think that's absolutely something they have to consider, and I would be fine or very happy they walked away. Well, Okoro, to me, is my number one overall. I'd be worried that he would get to you at eight. In fact, I don't think he would fall that far, but if you get lucky and he falls that far and you walk away in this draft with the Knicks draft asset for next year and Isaac Okoro, you just hit a home run. So that would be an ideal situation. But I don't know if that's going to happen. I just think if the Bulls, like, gosh, if that's an opportunity to go back and they don't take it and they draft Ball when they could have gone back, let's say Ball gets drafted, whoever at four, would you rather have Denny at four or Okoro or Halliburton at eight and the Knicks draft asset for next year in a loaded draft?
Like, let me see what that pick is, right? If it is a unprotected first, yeah, I think I'd do that. I think I'd trade down because, to me, whether it's Okoro or Halliburton or Vassell, who are all guys who are going to probably, one of those three absolutely will be there at eight. Two of those guys might be there at eight. And so, yeah, like, if it's an unprotected first, I'm doing it. If it's a lottery protected first, then probably not. Like, it's got to be a good asset. Like, you can't just be doing the Knicks a favor by making that deal. It's got to be someone who, you know, and I would think that it wouldn't be a pick and a player given their roster right now. I think it would be a pick and a pick.
Yeah.
But it's got to be, like, it's got to be the right pick. It can't be, oh, we'll give you 2 second-round picks and then eight to move up. Like, that's not going to get it done.
No, exactly. If it's, like, similar to what Minnesota got for Golden State, or Golden State got for Minnesota, top five protected, if you're getting a 6 through 10 in next year's draft, that is a home run, you know. So
yeah, I'm doing that deal. Yes, amen. Absolutely. Kevin, I mean, even like the Pistons might move up too. Like if Ball falls to four, Detroit might move up to get him.
Why don't we talk about what's on deck at NBC Sports Chicago?
Yeah, so we have coming up on draft night a couple of pretty cool things. We're going to have Jason Goff, Kendall Gill, and Will Perdue in studio doing a live draft reaction show exclusively on the NBC Sports My Teams app. We're going to come on about 6:45, which is when the second pick is slotted to be made shortly before that. And we're going to essentially spend a half hour with those three guys reacting in real time to what the Bulls do and how that first 10 picks in the NBA draft unfolds. If the Bulls trade back, we'll stay on and we'll keep going until the Bulls pick. So that's about 6:45 on the My Teams app on Thursday, obviously Wednesday the 18th. And then at 10:30 that night, we're going to do a draft recap special in which Kendall, Will, and Jason certainly will talk about who the Bulls picked and how that player fits in the future. But we'll also hear from the first-round pick, whoever that might be. And we're going to take the live press conference with the front office. We expect Eversley and Karnišovas to talk at that point, and you'll hear from them on that show. So that's going to be the 10:30 shows on NBC Sports Chicago itself and the My Teams app. The 6:45 reaction show is only on the My Teams app. So we've got that coming up, and certainly, like you mentioned earlier about Rob Schaefer, who does fantastic work along with Casey Johnson on NBCSportsChicago.com. So, like, we've got you set. Like, we've got you covered.
The best team in Chicago, without a doubt, as far as covering the beloved Bowl, the talent you have over there, and I love all those guys. So, Kevin, I can't thank you enough for your time. I think we're both in agreement. The Red Leviathan is on its ascendancy. There's no doubt about it. I mean, what is happening?
It's coming. I mean, the big red bus better be full of gas.
All right, man. Have a great one, Kevin. Always good to talk
to you.
Thank you,
Fred. Identity IQ Services offers industry-leading credit report monitoring and identity theft protection. Benefits include monthly 3 bureau credit reports and scores, so you can be prepared when you apply for a loan or other credit. Along with credit report monitoring, Identity IQ services include identity theft protection, dark web and internet monitoring, and $1 million in stolen funds reimbursement underwritten by AIG. You can start Identity IQ services today for only $1 for a 7-day trial. Sign up today at www.identityiq.com/Chicago Bullseye. Identity IQ services has been named to the Inc. Magazine 5000 list as one of the fastest growing companies in America. Let Identity IQ services help you work towards your credit goals. Visit www.identityiq.com/Chicago Bullseye. Only $1 for a 7-day trial.